What's up? Welcome to the Copy Blogger Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You are catching us mid-conversation this week because I am observing something really, really interesting with the data and the metrics of our own podcast, of the show that you're listening to right now. And I was talking through it with Ethan. Hi, Ethan. What's up? How are you, my friend? I hope you're having a great week. And Ethan said, hey, like, this is really interesting. We should hit record. So we hit record, and we're just going to jump right in here. Here's the deal. I send the podcast out on my personal newsletter on timsods.com every week. And we also send the podcast out on the Copy Blogger newsletter each week. Obviously, the Copy Blogger newsletter has like a much significantly bigger audience. And we tried something this week, which I didn't really think too much of. It was just a little bit of an experiment. But this is fascinating to me. So I'm going to share my screen. We've been getting a pretty big audience on YouTube the last couple of weeks. Let me just make sure I don't have like any bank accounts or any shit like
that. Secret, secret plans take over the world.
So check this out, Ethan. I want to get your viewpoint on this because this is like really fascinating to me. So we're going to start with my newsletter. My newsletter's got it went out this morning to 7,403 people.
Congrats.
Thank you. I've been working really hard on it, man. I'm very proud of it. So I guess you have to kind of see it. I'll give you a little bit of a breakdown. My newsletter always follows the same format. There's my weekly blog post at the top, and then there's the podcast, which is the second story. So the podcast is always number two. I guess the last 6 months or so on the podcast, I've always had the click here to listen to iTunes and the click here to listen to Spotify link. And then today, I just threw in another link that said show notes and full video are available here. And this is the link that goes to the actual website for the podcast, which is copybloggerpod.com. And I was just looking at the data, and it turns out the vast majority of the people who clicked on a link for the podcast clicked on the actual website. 20 people clicked on the website. What is this?
Five
people clicked on the Spotify, and then three people clicked on iTunes. So that's like five to one average. And then if we go to the actual Copy Blogger newsletter, this went out to 122,000 people, just under. And we see the same thing. 245 people clicked on the actual website, on the Copy Blogger Pod link that has the video and the show notes in it. And then a small fraction of the people clicked on the iTunes link.
171.
Yeah, so it's you're not right. That's not quite as bad. There.
But I'm totally. still surprised.
Man. I would think the podcast just goes straight to iTunes or Spotify. But what is this? Do you think it's the YouTube video? Do you think people are actually interested in the show notes? Like, why do you think this is happening?
I don't know. But one of the reasons I thought we should record is because I hope people will holler at us and let us know if you're one of the people clicking on that link. What is it about that you're so interested in? I know some people who like to watch podcasts. You know, they'll watch like a 3-hour episode of Joe Rogan, which I get. I think that could be like it kind of replaces TV when you think about it. Is that what's going on? And should we be focused a little bit more on the video? Or was it just like those show notes? Or are you just not like, and maybe there's a certain group of people that are not Spotify or Apple users, but that seems a little bit less likely.
No,
I mean, I'm saying that because it's me. Like I'm on Android and I listen to my podcasts on Anchor. So, I would be one of the weirdos who clicks that other thing.
Yeah. But you're the weirdo for sure. But you know what, man? I think you're onto something here. I think podcasts are becoming more and more like shows. And I will tell you exactly why I think that. I realized after we did last week's episode, another reason why there was such a huge disparity between the subscribers and the listeners was because I've never actually watched Miss Rachel on YouTube. I've pulled my remote and I spoke into the remote and I said, play Miss Rachel on YouTube. Right. And so I also noticed the same exact thing that I do on Saturdays because I kind of have like a Saturday morning routine. Jules is studying and I enjoy listening to the All In podcast. It's like a cool little wrap up about markets. It's like very bro-ish. You know, I can kind of listen to some dudes shooting the shit. It's like a good way to start my Saturday. And the same exact thing. Like, I never listen to it. I always speak into my remote on the TV and I say, play the All In podcast on YouTube. And I wonder if it really is about the YouTube, if people are becoming more and more inclined to like participate in podcasts as like an all-encompassing viewer experience and less as, you know, the let me throw on a podcast when I'm on the treadmill type deal.
That's super interesting. Yeah, right? It's also a good segue kind of into another note that we should probably talk about. So just for context, for anybody who didn't catch last week's episode, when he says Miss Rachel, he's talking about this YouTuber that we kind of described, I guess it was last week, right?
Yeah, it was last week.
And she's incredible. Her and her husband are building a business, and they have just tens and tens, if not hundreds of millions of views on their videos. And so we broke that whole system down. You know, the episode went live Wednesday, and then a listener, Joey Dowd, actually followed up and wrote like sort of some additional notes on Twitter related to what we were saying. So some of the interesting things, and I just wanted to call this out because I thought, you know, Tim, you and I were talking about this before we recorded. His points were really interesting. We always love hearing from people who are actually talking about the show, offering their takes on things. And he had a couple of really interesting points, and he is big in this world of like video marketing too. So he runs a company called New Territory Media. They do a lot of things. One thing is like video marketing for brands. And I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to misstate the way he would describe his own company. The other thing that they do though is they're like award-winning documentarians. And very so, cool. Yeah, they got a lot of cool stuff going on. So he knows this space, and he had a couple interesting notes about what we had said related to Miss Rachel. So some of the things that we called out were that it was really fascinating that her viewer count was so high compared to her subscriber count, which, you know, I don't think I was trying to make any kind of particular point about that from a business perspective, except that it stood out to me because, you know, typically from my perspective, it's rare to see somebody who gets way more interaction on their content than they do even in the size of their audience. You know, like, so for me on Twitter, I've got whatever, 4,000-ish followers. But I've never gotten 400,000 likes on something. And like Miss Rachel's pretty consistently seeing engagement rates that are way beyond the size of her audience. So you said the submetrics doesn't say a ton. Lots of views for lots of channels come from non-subs, which I think is what you were talking about there. So this is for people to keep in mind in case you decide to take action on any of the things we were talking about last week.
Yeah.
But the other thing that he said that I thought was really interesting, that which I totally didn't key in on last week, was we were talking about some of the estimated revenues for her channel, and they were quite substantial. But he made a good point. He said, you know, because her videos are made for kids, that limits ads and targeting. So they usually have like a lower CPM than normal. But he said, you know, with 500 million plus views, she's still definitely making bank. So just wanted to call out Joey because those were some pretty interesting insights. Great points. Too, like, I think it, whenever you're considering opportunities in a space, like, it's important to have an accurate representation of like what the real opportunity is. And so if there are these little things that are like, oh yeah, well, it's a huge market, but here are these things that sort of change the picture a little bit, I think it's really cool. It's when somebody can kind of bring that nuance to the table. So shout out to Joey for that. Dude, did you look into him anymore?
Yeah, we've been talking. His company is actually really interesting. And I'm going to send him a list of questions to do a case study on him because, it's the kind of company that I dig. It's like the sort of get your hands dirty, but take advantage of like a real opportunity, kind of thing. I was talking to him on Twitter. I was like, hey man, I've been swamped. I just got back to Nashville. Didn't have time to send you the questions, but we'll see what happens. Nonetheless, I thought it was a fascinating thread. I thought Joey brought some really cool things to the table. And most of all, like, thank you, because we generally really, like, it really makes my day when I see people coming up with their own interpretations of the things that we talk about. It's like very rewarding. And so Joey, we really appreciate it. We'll make sure we link that thread in the show notes of this week's episode, which is on copybloggerpod.com. So check it out.
Show notes that everybody is clicking on. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Ethan, you have been hyping up this week's episode all week. It sounds like you have a really fascinating story and a really great case study. So the mic is yours, my friend. Let's tee this bad boy up.
Yeah. Well, I actually think starting with Joey was a pretty fitting beginning, because we ended last week's episode talking about these interesting like product drop type companies. And you and I were talking, I'm actually curious to hear a little bit about whether you found anything in this space, because I know you've been digging. But again, just to give people a little bit of context, because this is almost a part two of the conversation, we were showing these product drop companies who have basically built their entire followings on Instagram, and it's very difficult to order from them. Some of them don't even have order pages at all, or they started and like ran the business for a year or more. The only way to order from them was via Venmo or sliding into their DMs or something. And we were talking about how fascinating it is that people can run successful businesses basically doing the opposite of what all the conventional advice is. Yeah. Like, hey, you need your conversion rate optimization in place. You need your ads on point. Your website's got to be beautiful. All these things. Okay. And we kind of left the last episode saying, like, I wonder if there's other businesses that are doing this. Mm-hmm. So by pure happenstance, I spent part of the early part of this week just cruising through some of the top 100 lists of like the top 100 sellers on Amazon or Etsy or like Walmart Marketplace. And in doing that, I found a really, really interesting case study of this. And it's like these little Instagram businesses that we found, but at a way bigger scale. So have you ever heard of Woot.com?
Woot, W-O-O-T?
Yep.
No, never.
Okay. I hadn't either. And I'm kind of surprised that I hadn't, because it was a little bit of like a cultish internet thing. And I kind of come from like this internet.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't like a super nerd growing up, but you know, like I've been into like internet stuff for a little while. Let me set this up. I'm also going to share my screen too,
cool,
because there's a visual element to this for now that I know everyone's tuning into the movie. So Woot.com, and I know it hasn't shared yet. I'm going to share it right now. Woot.com was this daily deal site. And if we have, here's the problem with this story. This was totally new to me and it completely blew my mind. This is one of my favorite entrepreneurship stories recently. But anybody who is like familiar with this, it's going to be like me describing Amazon to you. Like, have you heard of Amazon.com? You know, like there's this guy, Jeff Bezos, and he was working on Wall Street. And like anybody who's super familiar with this is just going to be like, yeah, bro, this was a big deal. Okay. So I should probably tee this up by saying Woot was a big deal back in the early to mid 2000s. And it was a daily deal site started by this guy named Matt Rutledge. So Matt was an electronics wholesaler. And so that means like he used to, the wholesaling business, for people who don't know, is sort of interesting. What you do is you go out and you can buy inventory from manufacturers at like large quantities, like bigger than even a retailer would buy. And because you're buying in such large quantities, you get a really good deal. And then the goal is to sell that to either directly to customers at a deal that they couldn't find anywhere else, or even to retailers, because you got it at such a steep discount, you can even sell it to them cheaper than they can get it from the manufacturer. So this whole like wholesaling business works out really well. He does well there, wholesaling electronics. And eventually he starts this company called Woot.com, which was a daily deal site that he would use to offload inventory. And it was kind of interesting for three reasons. First, it only ever offered one thing for sale every single day. There was no product selection at all. You came to the website, you either liked the thing or you didn't. Second, they would sell that thing until they either sold out of inventory or until the clock hit midnight. And then every day at midnight, like the clock would refresh, the page would change, and they have a new product that comes up. And then the third thing that, and this is what really set Woot apart, is that they were, actually, I have a quote here that I want to share because I think Wikipedia put it best, but they said, he encouraged his copywriters to be, quote, entertainingly frank about the shortcomings of the often obsolete products that were sold on the site. And that's why you're seeing, okay, so we're looking at this page. I'm showing Tim a page from the Internet Archive. This is a Woot.com listing.
2004.
From, yeah, wow, yeah, yeah. Or 05. High 05. Yeah, 05. 05. December 4th, 05. And, you know, it's a coffee maker. But so he would sell this stuff that was like not super cutting edge, just kind of like junky stuff. And the way he would keep people coming back is through hilarious copy.
Hold on one second. Friends just aren't comfortable with the feel-good wood grain Birkenstock vibe that surrounds coffee these days. They can't bring themselves to listen to the wise middle-aged singer-songwriters who say the word barista.
Coffee for them isn't an indigenous communal beverage. Yeah, it's crazy copy. It's amazing copywriting. Okay, so that was the business. Daily Deal site, meh products, yeah. Amazing copywriting, and he would just sell them like crazy. Okay, the internet loved this thing. By 2008, I believe it was, they were rumored to be doing $164 million a year. They'd grown 39% year over year. And they had a whole bunch of sub-brands. So he had this, like, he had, like, just Woot.com, and then there would be wine.woot.com. I think they had a t-shirt brand as well. And so they had started to expand to, like, other categories. But they all did the exact same thing. One product a day, and you either came here and you bought it, or you didn't. Okay. Then in 2010, they sold to Amazon. And Amazon did what Amazon does whenever they buy a business. They Amazoned it up. They started optimizing everything and adding add-ons and all kinds of extra stuff until eventually Woot, like, you could barely even recognize it. Now, Woot.com is still around, still an Amazon property. And this is how I found them. They're actually one of the top Amazon sellers in the world, which shouldn't be very surprising because Amazon literally owns them, right? But the story gets funny because Matt, like, 2 years after selling with his non-compete running out, got tired of seeing his baby sort of like twisted. So he jumped ship and he started a new website called meh.com. And meh is a perfect reboot of woot.com. Now I'll give you the quick wrap up here and then we'll dig into what I love about this. But like meh is one of six brands that he now runs under a single parent corporation. The parent company is called a mediocre corporation. And here, I'll show you this. They literally have, they call themselves an event-driven retail. And what that basically means is
they're
all direct competitors with Woot.com. They pretty much, the models vary a little bit from brand to brand, but basically each one of these is some sort of like deal site. So meh is a almost perfect shameless reboot of Woot.com. Then there's Side Deal, Morning Save, which kind of operate in the same way. Casemates is something that allows you to buy like wine and then like split it with friends. Mediocrity is really cool.
For t-shirts.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
It's awesome. And he, this is really cool. So every Monday and Thursday at 11 a.m., they spotlight an indie artist with two of their designs. So it's really cool. It's like event-driven retail. Boy, so I'm going to pause there for a second, but here's like the really cool secret thing about this company. It's not just the e-commerce. Like, and again, the reason I brought this up was I think this is the mega example of what we were talking about last week, where last week you have these sort of little scrappy creators who are building cult followings around what they're doing. And because of that, they're able to like break all the rules. He's doing the exact same thing at scale. And so like, if you go to meh, you get to choose from one thing every day and that's it. Like there is no.
Can you go to it? I want to see the site.
I'll go to it here, but okay. I'm going to go to it. I have to caveat this though, which is okay. Matt is a Daily Deal site. And of course, the one day that we decide to record this for like a huge public audience.
Condoms.
No, it's like the value pack of vibrators. That's what's on sale for today. It's like, remember like when you were a kid, you'd be sitting around watching a movie at home and it's totally innocuous until your parents walk into the room. And then all of a sudden, like the craziest sex scene comes on.
That's
this site for us today. But
oh my God, this is perfect.
But the you can
skin
see.
Thrill. The skin. What does that say? Shiver?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a combo pack of vibrators. But like, if you look at the copywriting. So when the company is called something like Skin, you should know exactly what kind of wellness deal we're dealing with here. So let's just get straight to it. This is a bundle of three differently shaped vibrators and a stimulating gel. And like, it goes on and on and on. But like all the bullets are like, the wellness we're talking about here is sexual wellness, if you haven't figured it out yet. And then the kicker at the very bottom of this is hilarious. And this is what I was getting at a second ago. It's not just an e-commerce company. This is a media company disguised as an e-commerce company.
Sure.
The thing that keeps people coming back to this, and I'll show you this in a second. This is crazy. One of the things I love about this site is that at the very bottom, they track all their stats every single day. So they'll show
who's
you how
buying this crap.
Yep. So for people listening, they've got so far today, how many people visited, how many people clicked meh, which the I like part of the shtick of this site is if you don't buy, you just kind of like click meh. There's a button for like, you can just, I'll just show you. Like you just click meh and that's it.
Yeah,
but that's the whole thing. Yeah. It'll show you how many people engage with that. So that's kind of like that community building thing, right? It shows how people got there. The website's 95% direct traffic.
Wow.
People just typing in meh.com straight from the browser. And then of the other 5%, like a significant portion of it comes like, look at this, from Mediocrity. So that's one of their other brands from Side Deal, which you can see up here. So their brands flywheel each other. What else do they do? 31 grand in business today. So far, and they're sold out. So that's not going to go
on that one product.
Yep. Yeah. And it's like this every single day. Like they do pretty serious volume, and it shows you who's buying this crap. So it's like a geographical breakdown. How many people are buying like 1, 2, 3 sets? And then they'll always have some kind of survey here. And so what's so fascinating about this business, not aside from the scale, like these are big numbers they're putting up.
Yeah.
But aside from the scale is that they are basically a media company who keep people coming back day after day with their hilarious copy and the way that they interact with people and build a community. Let me show you another example of this. And I have to stop sharing my screen for a second just to make sure I'm sharing it the right way because I'm going to need audio. So
this is my favorite thing I've ever seen.
Isn't this amazing?
This
and it's
so
like
good.
I've never heard of them before. And like I said up top, it's like there's some people here who are they just think I'm an idiot for saying that. But okay, so this is how they launched it. Oh, I said, they 95% of their traffic is direct. And then it has a breakdown. It says the other 5% of you came from, and then there's 5 things listed there. And I've checked this day after day, typically only the top 5. So they don't do like a long trailing breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, it's typically Twitter and then some combination of their other sites. They don't run ads. This website for people listening is super ugly. There's nothing. I mean,
it's hideous.
It's hideous, but I also kind of love it because it's really simple. There's like an image, there's the copy, and then there's like a whole bunch of community stuff. So they've got forums attached to all this, but it's not like a super slick. I think the people at Shopify would literally have a stroke if they saw this. Let me show you how they funded it. So, or they not funded it because, like I said, the dude sold this company for $110 million. So, he was doing fine when they decided to start this. But in order to get the ball rolling, and I would say this was more for to build the community than anything else, they did a Kickstarter. So they did a Kickstarter with the target of raising $10,000. And I think I'm sharing audio. Tell me if you can hear the audio on this. I'm just going to play like the first couple of seconds of their Kickstarter video because I think it speaks to the way that they approach community building and like their voice in general. So here it goes. Can you hear that?
Yeah,
hello, potential sucker. I'm here to talk to you about an exciting business opportunity. For me, I mean. An exciting business opportunity for me. See, I'm the spokes troll for a new / old online retail experience coming / coming back soon to an internet near you. It's called Meh. And it's the return of the Daily Deal.
It goes on like that for a little while. It's hilarious, though. Like, we'll link all this stuff up in the show notes. People can check it out. But they're just really funny. And here's something that a lot of people don't know. The last company, Woot.com, same thing. He built that company around a blogging team before they really built out. I mean, I shouldn't say for certain because I'm not sure precisely what the team was structured like early in Woot's days. But I do know that he brought his brother on as one of like the early co-founders, early leaders of the company. And his brother ran geeklife.com, which was one of like the big kind of like tech nerd blogs back in the 90s/2000s, I think. And they hired 5 writers pretty early in that project. So they, from the beginning have thought of this as like a content brand, a media brand that just happens to sell stuff. And so I love this. I also think that there's a huge opportunity to potentially replicate this for other creators who already have that following. And so we can talk about it in more detail, but I just wanted to show that to you because I think it's hilarious.
This is phenomenal. I cannot believe that you found this, especially that you stumbled upon it like the week after we just talked about that product drop model.
Right.
All right. A few things come to mind. One is that I've done not nearly as much in my career, but I've done some e-commerce. In particular, there's a company called 8and9.com. It's one of my best friends. His name's Ray. He started this streetwear brand out of Miami, and it's been running for like 25 years. It's one of the coolest clothing companies ever. I've tried to buy a piece of his company like a gazillion times, and he won't do it, which I'm still slightly resentful for. But anyway, we always used to go back and forth about how important product copy is. And ultimately, we just landed at this idea that the image is more important and like the specs are more important, you know, like the inches around the chest, right? Like the shoulder length, that kind of stuff really matters when you're doing e-com. And I mean, who knows? Maybe we're totally wrong because we're always thinking about optimizing content for like conversion and for benefits, but maybe it's got nothing to do with that. Right. Maybe it's just about like building an identity around your content, like having a voice. And then on that note, similar, but not quite the same. I just checked to see if they do it and they don't. One of my favorite companies, The Hundreds, there's a guy named Bobby Hundreds, and he was like, he really revolutionized fashion because he was the first one to ever like create content marketing and incorporate it into e-commerce. And so, He's since redesigned his site, but for a long time, like the blog was the big generator of sales. And he would do cool stuff, like just personal stories about local hip hop artists, especially in LA, and like about the skate scene, about the art scene. He used to do like Art Basel in Miami all the time. It was a piece that I would really look forward to. And so when I saw this, I went to thehundreds.com where you were telling me to see like what their product pages look like. And there's nothing there. There's just the typical product picture, shop now button, and then like the specs underneath it in all bullet points, you know? And so I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of data that these people have, and they must do it the way they do it for a certain reason. But this guy's just breaking all the rules. And especially a brand like The Hundreds, who already had such a cool identity around like streetwear and street art and skating and
yeah,
like
they
urban
could have
culture.
A lot of voice.
Yeah, they could have such a voice, you know? I don't know. I'm like everything I thought I knew is it was all a lie.
Meh. Oh my God. It's so funny, dude. Like they'll do these YouTube videos where they write new songs, like a troll character sings songs.
Totally. He's a puppet. He's a sock puppet.
I'm glad you brought up The Hundreds though, because that was exactly the brand that I thought of when
Really?
Well, yeah, because they've always been so good. I read Bobby Hundreds' book on community. Like, I think it's called This Is a T-Shirt.
Exactly. No, I think This Is Not a T-Shirt.
Oh, it's okay.
So.
It's the opposite of what I said.
it's the same, just opposite.
Yeah. But it was really interesting. I hadn't heard of them before that, but he has such a unique community building approach. And I think that's really the key. Rutledge does really well is build community around this idea. And like, for him, the idea is almost like I would be willing to bet a non-trivial percentage of people who buy from Matt every day, they just buy because like as part of the community, you know, like they don't even want the stuff, you know, like literally when Woot kind of made their name on a product that they would sell, they had the monthly bag of crap. And here, let me read the, I'll read the posting because it's hilarious. Like the copywriting on it was just amazing. I got to pull it up from the web archive, so it might take a second, but the whole idea is that, oh, okay, here it goes. Here, I'll share my screen so you can see it too. The whole idea is that they're building community and that the community sort of like agrees, oh, this stuff's not important. Like we're not going to take ourselves too seriously. You know, this is just like a dumb product that you might want. And literally, actually, before we get into this, let me show you one other thing, which is, oh, you just shared my... So this is Mez's Twitter account. It literally says, last year's stuff, tomorrow's price. And you want to talk about imagery, like they have the most hilarious images. It's almost like what you do on your blog, dude, how you use those stock photos with your face, which I think is amazing. Every single day they have all their whatever.
Oh my God, are those vibrators being
dropped
out of
a bomber?
A bomber?
And then here, like when I was just scrolling this, I thought they literally were selling swim trunks for dogs, but it's not. They're they're men's wicking performance mesh shorts. And for people listening, they've photoshopped them onto some kind of like yellow lab that's just jumping into a pool. Like, so they do these hilarious images. They definitely don't take themselves too seriously. This was a vacuum that they were selling, like a what's that little robot vacuum?
Oh, a Roomba?
Yeah, it's similar to that. So they always do these funny things. They don't take themselves too seriously. I think that's the key. They're community building. It's not just about the product. Somebody like the Hundreds, they have that advantage, which is that they built that community. And I think other people who are listening to this, man, community is such a moat. I mean, I think there are some companies that really are product first, and that's cool. The problem is, in this day and age, you know, it's so possible to copy a product. Like, products to be reverse engineered, copied, open source can do almost anything. Like, it's just not enough to lean on the product anymore. You have to really be building community in some way. So here's the random bag of crap. It's $1 plus $5 shipping and handling. Tired of clicking all over the web and looking for the lowest price on the finest merchandise with the best features from the most reliable retailers? Give your inner consumer's reporter a break by indulging in a purchase that no one would mistake for a good deal. Another one of Woot's famous bags of crap. And the picture is just like a random briefcase, so you don't even know what you're getting.
You don't even know what's in it?
Yeah. Hey, when this crap arrives at your house, grouse ye not that ye've been had. We're admonishing you in all caps that what we've got here is crap. Look, and this is like all caps. It says, caveat emptor, suckers. This item consists of one bag with, let's say about 3 pieces of crap inside. If you order fewer than 3 craps for your bag, it's really not that cost effective. But don't let us tell you how to waste your money. After all, you're the one who buys this crap. So like, and then the rest of the thing, I won't read the whole thing in full, but we'll link to this listing too.
Sold out.
All about like, yeah, the rest of the listing is all about how to control your disappointment when you get this bag of crap. And it's all about like, you know, don't have high expectations in the first place and all this other hilarious stuff. So all that to say, yeah, the community building is just really, really strong on this one. And I think the Hundreds, like, so I've studied the Hundreds pretty closely, actually. One thing that they're doing these days, which I think is really interesting and that a lot of brands could take advantage of if they so chose, is live e-com. And so what they're doing, like, I stumbled across this. They do these like live behind the scenes breakdowns of t-shirts where they'll have some guy come on, one of the artists or somebody at the company will come on live stream. He'll talk about the most recent product drop. And then people will tune in and you can buy the shirts while you're watching right there. And they have a custom viewer so that you don't even have to leave the live stream in order to purchase shirts and stuff like that. Those are all similar examples of ways that building community can really bolster e-com and the moat that it gives you.
Yeah, so I suppose the cop-out example is Harley Davidson, right? That's always like the example that gurus write about in books. But what are some more? but what are some more nuanced ones? Like, the other one that comes to mind is Chuck Taylors. Like, have not changed their shoe design in what, like 80 years? You know, I don't even know when that came out. Maybe less, maybe more. Don't quote me on that. But it's like such a community-driven brand. E-com brand. I think it's cool to focus on e-com because like it's a community built around a product. It's not a community for the sake of a community, right? So I think it's important to make that distinction.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are some like women's brands? I don't shop for women's stuff really. But
well, yeah. The last time I bought women's clothing, I don't know. I can't answer that. But
either how embarrassing.
I'm sure there's a bunch. And what last episode plus this episode sort of show is that the opportunities in this space are growing, not shrinking. And the reason for that is because there's like an exponential growth in the numbers of opportunities for community building. So you can just keep like adding features to your demographic in order to create a new audience and appeal to a new type of person. So, I mean, to your point, the simplest version of this, you could literally do math for women, right? I mean, today they do all sorts of different products, and I think that's largely a result of their wholesaling model. But there's a really interesting thing going on in the world today where because of the kind of bullwhip effect of supply chain disruptions on retail recently, a lot of retailers here in the US have way more inventory than they can handle. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they can't manage returns anymore. They don't have warehouse space for all the stuff that they have on the shelves. Prices are cratering. And so I think there's a world in which retailers start looking for more help from liquidators soon, which is not quite the same thing as a wholesaling model. But, you know, if you were to build a brand around liquidating very specific types of products, and then it's a content-driven brand, community-driven brand, I think there's just going to be a lot of opportunity in that space. You could do this exact same model for the outdoors industry specifically, or like you said, you know, certain, I don't know, if I, it might be more complex with fashion because that's a little bit more. Like,
yeah, there's lifestyle fashion involved.
Yeah, and also fashion is already so brand heavy.
Yeah. Like,
nobody's heard of, you know, that, or like the little flying saucer robot that they are selling. Mm-hmm. It's not a major brand that you've heard of before. I don't know. It's just really interesting. So I wanted to call that out. The other thing that I'll just say, which I think we may have touched on last week, is that you don't have to think too big about this. Like, there are a lot of local, super local. I see this a lot with restaurants, ice cream places, bakeries, all that kind of stuff that are using this model. And it's giving them an edge inside an industry that used to be a lot harder to compete in. So you could imagine using the same type of approach for, like, even local services, like dog daycares or something like that. I don't know. At some point, it becomes so broad that we're just kind of talking about content marketing. But
exactly, you're talking about just having a personality in your brand.
Yeah, yeah. What I like about Matt is that it shows you can break the rules.
And, you can totally break the rules. Yeah, well said. And man, this is just so, like, you can take this conversation in such a million different directions, right? Like, you can focus on e-com, you can focus on content, you can apply, like, this idea of having a personality to anything, really. One of the things that stuck in my head, though, I think what I'm getting from it, if there's a thing that I can apply to be better at, it's what you said, that, like, community is such a moat with e-com. And I think e-com has been just so, like, Amazon, right? It's been so commoditized that there's no way to compete on price anymore, because you can't out Amazon. It's impossible. So the only thing you have left is your uniqueness, you know, because if you're both selling the same coffee maker and you can't sell it cheaper than Amazon, then what are you going to do? You're going to be, you know what it comes to mind actually is, one of my best friends has a YouTube channel, and he's really into overlanding. It's just like kind of a new phase right now where you basically say, like, fuck society, I'm going to buy a Jeep and just, like, drive in the desert, like, always and, like, forever.
That resonates with me.
Yeah. And their community is so thick. Like, it is so thick. And they spend crazy money on, I mean, it's expensive gear. You know, if you want to buy a tent that props up on the top of your Jeep and is safe and can legitimately, like, withstand a rainstorm, it's potentially like $3,000-$4,000, and they buy it. So I know this is, like, a little bit tongue in cheek, but for some reason, the first thing that came to mind is like industries like that, where the community is kind of already baked in to the product, you know, and, like, how do you take that and then just double down on it so that you can steal like a small piece of the pie from Amazon.
Totally. And I think this actually speaks to something that the Met team included in their Kickstarter campaign. So there's this little bit at the end where the little troll guy is like, I'm just kind of paraphrasing it, but he says, like, you know, this is going to be, like, the most amazing thing until it eventually becomes just one other daily deal site.
Yeah.
And, like, it's overloaded with a whole bunch of disappointing blah, 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 blah. And I think what they're alluding to there, I know they're kind of joking, but the reality is all businesses eventually abandon their original user base in order to scale. And so some people, I think, might think that that's a bad thing, but what it means is that there's always going to be an opportunity to come in and be that new name really authentic, and you can get your foothold. You know, I was just talking to a couple of guys about newsletters, and they were asking, you know, how do you sort of, like, define where you want to start with that? And I said something similar, which is, like, well, I think one thing that helped the hustle early on was they took a look around and just ask themselves, what do I wish was here? Mm. Because you can't out Amazon. You can't out Morning Brew. But you can go into those spaces and be the voice that is not represented right now. And when the hustle first started, it was, hey, we're going to be like your best friend, but just like talking about tech and business news. Nobody's doing that. Everybody's trying to make tech and business sound really important. And like, you know, it was Entrepreneur, it was Forbes, it was all these people. We're just going to be like your best friend. Yeah. It's going to be like your best friend texting you. And you'll always be able to do that because, you know, just think about the communities that you belong to. And this is what I'm talking about when I say like this kind of like a fractalization of communities.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what big dogs exist. You just need to be in touch with what you wish was present kind of in the space. One other thing related to that, I actually didn't plan on bringing this up, but.
And it's so well said, man. It really is. There's a big lesson there.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, that actually ties in with this next thing, which every once in a while we do something here where it's like, I feel like we'll sort of highlight, Miss Rachel was a version of this. It's like, just go do the thing that you are so interested in.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry so much about where there's opportunity or, you know, what's going to pay off. Those things matter. But that's why we say start with cash flow, right? Like have your job. And then when it comes to creative stuff, just go do what you are really passionate about. And eventually the audience will come. And then once the audience is there, you can build the products on it. And I found an interesting example of that the other day. Actually, what I should say, first of all, is there's a lot of really big examples of this right now. So one that we may have talked about before here, I mean, you know, Cameron Haynes, right? The bow hunter.
Yeah. We talked about him.
Yeah. So he's a kind of an interesting example because, you know, you wouldn't think that like bow hunting is something that would put you in the mainstream or give you a best-selling book or any of those types of things. But he was just out doing his thing, and then he caught the interest of somebody who had the audience already, right? And you can't plan that.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens way more than people think. So I was just watching – I just found this new analyst that I really like to watch his YouTube videos. His name is Jake Bro, and he's so interesting to me because he talks a lot about the economy. He'll talk about these different wars that are going on or like international conflicts. And he has a very interesting take on it. The first video I saw of his was related to Ukraine and Russia. And so I don't know if people are watching a lot of these Ukraine-Russia breakdowns, but a lot of people, there's sort of like a battle map that's available somewhere on the web that shows, you know, where the front line is kind of drawn. And then every day it updates with whatever land was taken by Russia or Ukraine. So back and forth. And there's a lot of analysts on YouTube that sort of track this movement back and forth. Well, the first video I saw from this guy, Jake, he says, a lot of people are tracking this battle map. I've been tracking a different battle map. And he pulls up the price of crude oil. And then he lays out this entire economic argument for why crude oil is really the thing you're going to have to pay attention to. It's going to be the thing that kind of decides this war. And so what I like about him, regardless of where you stand on that conflict, is that he thinks different than most people, right? Mm. Like rather than just looking at the situation on the ground or the map that most people look at, he is looking at different resources for some sort of insight into the same situation. And I love people who think like that, even if I disagree with them on certain things. I try to find them because they're such interesting thinkers. So I really like this guy. I've been watching his stuff. And the example that I found recently of like, just make your thing is he was reporting on Jake Bro was reporting on a festival, a Ukrainian festival in Canada. And he was trying to find videos of it. And he says like, I can't find videos of it anywhere. But I did find this one kid who plays the accordion, and he was practicing the accordion, and he has a YouTube channel. He's practicing the accordion for this festival. He has a YouTube channel. He had 500 followers the day that Jake posted this video, which was the day before I saw it. So 24 hours before, he had 500 followers. And Jake just said, he literally just said, hey, look, if you like these videos and you want to kind of surprise this kid, I'm going to follow him on YouTube. And if you like accordion or you think he's cool, like you can go follow
him
too.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, right. Who doesn't love the accordion? So I saw this video like 24 hours after that was posted. You want to guess how many followers this kid had?
I'll guess 3,000.
Okay, I'm glad you guessed. Thanks, man, for guessing relatively low so that I can actually shock you with this.
It's more than that?
Yeah, dude. Hold on a second. I'll show you right here. Let's see what it's up to now. I'm not sure what I'll show you what it was yesterday. Yeah, so he's up to 6,000 subscribers. What is that? 12 Ukrainian times. His audience grew 12x. Merch. What's that?
Ukrainian wedding merch.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the...
this is the video.
Yeah, that's the festival. So here's a kid who was, you know, I don't think he started recording Ukrainian, like, accordion videos because there's, like, a huge pending market for that. He was interested in it, you know? he was interested in it, and he built enough of an audience. And there just happened to be this moment where his world collided with somebody who had the audience and who was interested and wanted to see it. And now he's got like a really significant audience. And I don't know what his plans are for it, but I just thought it was such a great example of just go do your thing, man. Who cares? Make sure you have your cash flow first. Yes, that's really important. But do the thing that's most interesting to you, because the audience will come over time.
I got one more example, and I love how this episode is going on a journey where take Matt, because that's the central point. If you were to talk to Matt Rutledge and he came to you 20 years ago and said, yeah, I'm going to make a multi-million-dollar website where I basically put a random thing up and then I talk about all the reasons why you shouldn't buy it. You'd be like, what? This is awful. But it was his thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like e-com or community being a moat and all that stuff, like that's cool and a little bit more technical, but it was his thing. And he had a unique way of viewing the world and he expressed that. You got this accordion guy. That's another example. All right. We're going to revisit a recurring theme in this podcast, which is my dad. My dad hasn't been doing his podcast too consistently, but he really has been doing it. He's been doing it, I'd say like one episode every 10 days or so. And, you know, he's out of work and his shoulder blew out because of the surgery and the whole thing. He's got like a bunch of screws in his shoulder now. He's doing, maybe not screws, he's got a bunch of scars is what I meant to say from the surgery. And he's doing really great. He's actually like never been happier. It's also really weird because he's still in a great deal of pain. And so seeing him and like, it's been giving me some lessons just about the difference between like your physical life and like your mental and your spiritual life, you know? And so I've been learning about that. The point is, he made this random ass video and he sent it to me and he was so proud of it. And I was like, wow, Dad, like that's really cool. Good for you, Pop. He's got this hourglass, you know, and he flips the hourglass and he says, okay, this is the past. Like this is what you can never get back. And this is the future. And this is the thing that you worry about and you can never see. And all you have is, and this is his quote unquote, the action zone, like where the sand passes from the past into the future. Basically, there's an analogy of like, this is your present day and like, don't waste it because like, this is all you get. This is your action zone. Put this video out there. A bunch of his old friends and stuff that he hasn't talked to in years send him messages. He's sending me all these screenshots about like, wow, just things haven't been going that well. And one of his old friends, their dad, also had Alzheimer's. And for some reason, like she showed this video to her dad. And it was a moment for her dad where like he was able to comprehend it, you know, and like, it was cool. He was sending me these screenshots. Anyway, the point I'm getting at is one of the people that reached out to him is somebody that's creating a brand new program in Philly where instead of emergency responders, it's, I forget exactly what he called it. I want to say in-home paramedicine, but that's not the technical term for it. But the point is, instead of racing and taking a lot of, like civil money, you know, like government revenue, taxpayer money, basically, and spending it on ambulances and bringing them to the hospital, they're creating another program that like meets them at their home and can treat them at their home without that whole trip and without the hospital bill and without the overnight stay and all of that. And he saw my dad's video, and this is the exact words that he said. This is the exact words. He said, you know, you've been an amazing paramedic. You're like a legend in Philly for being on the force for so long. And I see that you're putting yourself out there. That's exactly what he said. And he offered this. He offered my dad. Well, I can't remember exactly what it was. There was a bonus involved, and it was like a chance to come in and speak about possibly like launching this new program that is being funded by not the city, by Delaware County. It's a subset. It's like a suburb, you know? So
that's awesome.
Crazy, right? Off from this like ridiculously cheesy video that I honestly made me want to barf when I looked at it.
It's funny that you say that because I got the chills a little bit when you described it. I was like, oh, that's good.
It's good, but, right?
But I'm one of your dad's bigger fans, man. I've been listening to the podcast.
It's cool. I'm so proud of him.
That's such a good point, though. It's like you never know which one is going to be the one.
Man. Yeah, you never know.
Dude, I had my mind changed about this recently, too, because the thing – so I – one of the things I struggle with, especially when it comes to creating, is like perfectionism. I have a lot of ideas, and I tend to sort of trap them in notebooks or to-do lists. I just never end up taking action on them. And part of the reason for that is because I just build this idea in my head of how good it has to be before I could ship it. I mean, things that we've all talked about a million times here.
Yeah.
But recently, I forget what it was that actually caught my attention on this. I think it was actually Sean Puri who was talking about some throwaway tweet that he didn't even expect to be popular that ended up being massively popular for him, and people reach out, and like to this day, they still reach out for him. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? There's something about that where it's actually like you almost don't have the right not to share ideas that occur to you.
Right.
Because you never like you know what's. Yeah, because you don't really know what's going to be the one that's actually good for people, like what meets people where they are and really changes somebody's day. And so I've been thinking about that a lot more. And also just, yeah, I guess duty is probably a good word. And that I don't want that to sound douchey because, like, well, it's my duty to stand up here and share my ideas with everybody.
Maybe a responsibility.
Listening.
Like, you have a responsibility to
maybe
put yourself out there.
Maybe my God-given right. No, but what I'm getting at here is, like, I think I get in my own way when it comes to this. And what I found more and more recently is you are actually not a very good gauge of how good your ideas are. The world decides that. So don't worry so much about what you think is good and what you think is bad, or censoring yourself, or trying to filter for your best stuff. Like, just keep putting stuff out there. And I'm trying to do that more and more because you don't know what's going to click with people.
Yeah.
And I think your dad's a great example of that.
You just have no idea. You have no idea. I mean, we talked about that when I had my first ever like viral thread that got me those 4,000. I had no idea. I published a thing. And then I went to the gym, and then it was a Wednesday, and I only bring my phone into the gym on Wednesdays because I have like a quick Slack meeting with my executive team for Stodzy. And so Jules knows it, and that's why we save like our, I can't do deadlifts because of my back, but she does deadlifts on Wednesday because like she could put in her headphones, and I do the, you know, like the hex bar. It doesn't make me bend over so much. And so I do like hex bar squats. And the only reason I had my phone on me was because it was a Wednesday. And, you know, 2 hours later, I look in, I'm like, what the fuck? This got like 2,000 likes, and thought nothing of it. So you never know. Like, you never know. You got to put it out there.
Have you ever heard of Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert?
No.
Okay, so.
Know who that is. Should I?
Well, she's the one who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, which you've probably heard of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so she's pretty rad, actually. I hadn't gotten into any of her stuff until like 2 years ago. I think it was right when I was trying to figure out how to become a writer. So I started getting real deep into travel writing again.
Mm.
And obviously Eat, Pray, Love is like the book about travel writing, you know? So I listened to it and kind of fell in love with her voice. She's hilarious. And she's just very insightful, very thoughtful. And so I've listened to some of her other stuff. And she's got this book called Big Magic, which is all about creativity and kind of the creative process. And one thing she talks about there is this theory she has that ideas actually don't belong to you, that they are like kind of beings in the universe, and they're trying to find somebody who will bring them into the world. Cool. And so they go around looking for the right person. And that's like when the idea occurs to you, it's almost like the idea knocking on your door.
Yeah.
And if you wait too long, it'll leave and it'll go off and find somebody else, hopefully. Or, you know, you should kind of free ideas that in one way or another, either by bringing them into the world or by kind of letting yourself let go of it. And I just love that way of thinking about it. And I think that ties in with this concept that we're talking about here. And more, when things occur to me, I try to just kind of put them out there and like not maintain this long list of ideas for someday. Just put stuff out that's kind of imperfect and is fairly representative of what I was thinking, and just see what happens.
That's such a cool way to think about it, man. I'm going to like take that one with me. You know how I can't. Oh, yeah. That thing I said about focusing on the one thing that matters. Like, that was a real that I felt that, like, your ideas don't belong to you. They don't belong to anybody. They're like looking for a place to go. And that is so cool. Like, it takes all the pressure off, because like, what are you actually doing? It's not like you're presenting something that you can be judged on. It's just this. This, you know?
This idea showed up in my door.
Hey, look. Look, it's like a puppy that showed up on your doorstep. Like, hey guys, look what I found.
Yeah.
That's a good way to look at it. Like, hey, look what I found. Right?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good. Fuck yeah, dude. This is a great show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Hopefully great people show. Listening to this got a kick out of this one. Let us know what you think. Like we said, we shouted out at the top. love the fact that you guys are listening and saying stuff. Like when you tell us what you want more of or what you think about this, like we can adapt it and we'll call you out and all that kind of stuff. It's great to kind of interact with the group. So let us know what's up. We'll include links to everything we talked about in the show notes. Tim, is there anything else you want to tell the people before?
No, man. Just feeling really good. I'm enjoying this so much, and it's so cool to see not only that it's popular, but I genuinely feel like people are getting stuff out of our experience, and that makes me feel really good. Like it doesn't go unnoticed, and it doesn't go unappreciated. So
yeah,
thanks,
it's
everyone.
It's a two-way street, guys.
Yeah.
Get a lot out of
thank
you.
Guys
too, so thank
I'll
you.
See you guys next week.
Later.